The Big Papa Online Network on Blog Talk Radio is on the air.
Hey, it's Davey.
How you doing?
I'm doing good, man.
How was your trip to Sweden?
It was good, man. I got a girl and everything, so it was a bonus.
It's all that matters.
Yeah.
All right, so yeah, let's get this finished up.
Okay.
All right, so let's just get started. In the Third Eye Cinema, your source for in-depth discussion of cult cinema. Tonight, part two of our career-spanning interview with legendary glam metal vocalist, guitarist, and producer Davey Bain on the Big Papa Online Network on Blog Talk Radio. Focuses on film that matters, cult, grindhouse, drive-in, independent, and underground film from the dawn of the talkies through the early 90s. Tonight, we're concluding our interview with Davey Bain. This week, we hone in on his latest album, Enough Rope, a surprisingly hard-driving slab of metal that sounds more like his classic No Respect and All Those Strangers albums than anything he's recorded since. With the entire original lineup back in tow, Davey continues to mine the existential depths and tap into raw nerves with the same hard-rocking sound as the band was known for delivering nearly 25 years ago. Join us as we speak once again to the one and only Davey Bain, only here on Third Eye Cinema. But first, just to give you an idea of what we're talking about, here's Bain with a real standout off Enough Rope, the hard-driving yet surprisingly introspective and existential Triple X. got the whole band back together pretty much for 2005's On the Line. So tell us a bit about that, because, again, for all intents and purposes, it had been like a decade or more.
With all the original guys, yeah. You know, it just kind of happened. It wasn't like a complete plan, like, let's get everybody together and do a thing, you know? It was just kind of like all of a sudden one guy wanted to come jam, and then, you know, another guy came in, and then we just, you know, it was just kind of a natural thing. And then all of a sudden, right. Oh, God, we got almost all the original guys when you really think about it, you know? It just felt really comfortable and just kind of natural since we all know each other. I mean, we all grew up in the same town and just kind of had the same vibe. So, and then we thought, hey, let's take this on the road, because it's kind of the magic that all of us have together, and it was really exciting.
Yeah, because, I mean, it's kind of a shock. Usually when bands get back together, you get one or two guys, maybe three, but you got the entire band. I was like, whoa, what happened here?
We got really good reviews, too, which people were excited, and the shows were, like, over the top. A lot of people that never saw us, I mean, people were, like, crying and stuff. I couldn't believe it. Because a lot of people had never seen us with all the original, except for the first time that we played in the UK, and we hadn't been back for so long, so it was really cool.
The tone of this album was a bit more mellow and depressed than usual for a Vain album, with a few exceptions, you know, Running on Empty, Live for Love, maybe Slave. Was there any particular reason, anything going on in your life at the time that played into this?
I don't know about that. I just think that I kind of like writing dark. I like singing dark stuff. So if you really look at, like, No Respect or something, like Thousand Degrees and Smoke and Shadows, Without You, you know, it's just like, it's just kind of a little more pumped up. But I think I just started kind of getting into a thing where, as a singer, I kind of enjoy singing those more than, like, Ready or something like that, or even though it rocks, you know. So I think it's just, it just kind of came out. I just kept pumping those kind of songs out, so it wasn't like a plan or anything.
And finally, We Have Enough Rope, which, again, doesn't sound very far off from No Respect. It's like no time has passed, and we're back in 1989 again. And this time, you actually do have, like I said, the entire classic lineup back on board. So do you think this plays into why the record stands out more than the four albums since All Those Strangers? Or is there something else behind it? Because you really seem juiced up. Like, you got a little bit of that extra, the old fire back.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, everybody says that. I kind of went into it wanting to get kind of back and not getting so artistic, maybe, you know, and just kind of keeping it to the basics. And I had a few riffs that were from that era, so it sounded like that. And I think we've been playing to so many young kids all of a sudden again. You know, like you said, when we went on that 2005 tour, everybody was, like, pretty much in their 20s and 30s, you know what I mean? And, you know, and some of the people that were there the first time, you know, 30-something. And then all of a sudden, the last couple tours before we did that, it's like all kids wearing, like, Motley Crue shirts and just going crazy and singing Beat the Bullet. And I'm just like, God, we got, like, a whole new audience, too. And they're digging that. And then I just thought, you know what, I really want to get in and do a record that's just really going to kick. And I had some stuff that I was writing like that anyway. I think I'd been touring a lot more. And I think a lot of it was some of the equipment I was using at the time. I got some different kind of stuff in my studio that I thought was really bringing up my voice to sound a lot more like the No Respect era tone and the attitude. And my new assistant engineer is, like, a huge Vain fan. And he just, like, grew up listening to No Respect and learned how to play guitar and stuff. So he was totally, you know, just always like, oh, that's it, man, right there. You got to keep that take. You know, like, anytime I do anything that sounded like something off No Respect, he's like, oh, that sounds like Attitude, Davey, you know. So he would get so excited.
Awesome.
And I think a lot of it, too, is I just kind of had I moved away for like a year and kind of do a lot of crazy shit, moved to Europe and just, you know, kind of mixed it up and got into a different headspace. So I came back with a lot of songs. I mean, I was writing songs just walking down the street of shit that was happening to me, you know, like Greener and stuff like that. And, you know, and when I came back, I really had a lot in me I wanted to get out. So, I mean, a lot of nights I'd go to the studio to cut the vocals and I would just be in the control room and I just have nobody there, like not an engineer or anything. I just hit record and I'd run out there to put the headphones on really quick, and I would just, like, rock so hard, like, with my own kind of world and try different stuff, and then felt really good. You know, it was, like, probably the best I'd felt singing in the studio in a long time. Like, every time I do a take, I felt like I got some of the poison or something out, you know? It was like, you know, when you get hit by a rattlesnake, and they have a little thing, I don't know if you guys know about that, but they have a little suction cup that you have in a snake bite kit, and it sucks out the blood with the poison. I felt like my voice was just like I was singing out the poison. And when the tracks were done, even if they were about something that I didn't particularly have a good time experiencing, it was all, and then it became like art, you know, so it was really cool.
Yeah, and it's funny you actually mentioned Greener, because that song is particularly dark. I mean, Reach Up and I'll Touch the Ground in particular. You know, when I was going through my own long dark night of the soul right before meeting my wife, I wrote a very similar line. You know, like, almost wish I could reach up and kiss the ground. So I can relate to where you're coming from here. You know, whether you really do any self-analysis or not, you've kind of got a direct line to this kind of inner turmoil, pen stuff like that, and mean it.
Yeah, it was pretty. That was a pretty dark thing, and I've got it, a lot of it disguised and encoded. I really know what a lot of the stuff means. But yeah, because the original line I wrote was so low I can reach up and touch the ground, because it was like, yeah, that one I really liked, came out really good. That's why I put it first, even though it didn't rock as hard as some of the other ones. It just had kind of almost a newer feeling of 1,000 degrees or something like that, you know?
Yep.
And another thing, when we're in the studio doing stuff too, you know, if I was bringing in a riff, because how we kind of operate now is, I bring in a song and I usually jam on guitar with like the rhythm section first, just me and a drummer and a bass player.
Right.
And then, you know, we jam on the stuff a little bit and I'll sing a little bit and I'll get a feel for what someone's doing. And usually everyone's so advanced now, you know, compared to when we were doing No Respect and we were just kids and we just pound everything out. You know, everybody can do so many chops. So anytime, and then we had Tommy, the original drummer from No Respect, on most of the stuff. So anytime he'd kind of do anything a little tricky or something, I'd go, hey, man, no fucking around, just bash the shit out of it. He's like, okay, and then boom, you know. But he'd hit even harder because he'd be pissed kind of, you know. So, yeah, so it was. I think that was part of it. And then Jamie just kind of, you know, he's building all his own amplifiers and stuff, and so he just was using it as a testing ground and then just really getting back to the no. I just said, hey, let's not mess around. Let's really go for the No Respect sound. So
right.
He just, oh, no problem, and just really tapped right into that.
Yeah, it
so
totally comes across.
As a plan to kind of get back to basics.
Totally comes across in the record. Triple X is an awesome rocker. I mean, it harkens right back to the more hard-rocking tracks right off of No Respect. And, you know, it's got that killer guitar solo on it.
Yeah, he really ripped on that one. Yeah, thanks. That one's hard to play, too. I was having a hard time cutting the fucking scratch guitar on it because I cut the scratch guitar, and even though I wrote it, that riff was like, I was throwing everybody off, you know, and I go, shit, I can do it by myself. So then Jamie came in and did it after we cut the drums and bass. But, yeah, that thanks a lot. Yeah, that one's really fun. And that one was really written for the new fans, you know. I really had them in mind when I was picturing these, you know, new rock kids are just going nuts. And
what makes you interesting is, like, a song like that, even in the middle of all this, like, celebration of raunchy sex and loose living, you throw in that bit of soul-searching, like, if this is so great, then why am I so fucking lonely? You know, this is the kind of thing I've been hammering it all along here that makes you more like, say, early Prince or Darby Crash or Mike Ness around the time of Another State of Mind. You know, it's very introspective and very honest. You know, you're really bearing your soul for your art here.
Thanks, man. Yeah, it's like, I know I really like that line because I go, I don't think anyone's ever rhymed adults only and so fucking lonely. You know?
Exactly.
That was a great line. If she's so adults only, then why am I so fucking lonely? So I always pictured, like, if there was a video for that song, the girl would be like the total sex fantasy girl that everybody thinks about, raging all night. And then she comes home to the guy, and then he's all, and then she just kind of crashes out in the bed, and he's just like, you know, she's already spent, you know?
And, you know, I've been there, so I know exactly what you were talking about. And I'm like, how does this guy understand this shit? You know, this isn't, you know, you don't hear people talking like that normally. It's like, yeah, well, you should be happy, man. You got the hot girl. Well, yeah, but, you know, it doesn't always work that way. So
yeah, the fan are the people who are like, God, I wish I could date a porn star, stripper or something. That'd just be like, you know, like the chicks in the videos. You know, it's like, oh, you might not think might not be as fun as you think. You know?
Exactly, right. That's what I'm saying.
I got a new chick that's inspiring me right now for a lot of great songs.
Can't wait. So yeah. Are you actually working on the next album now, or is it just?
Yeah,
you know?
I'm working on a bunch of songs right now.
Fantastic. So Hot Stage Lights, where you're talking about escaping from all life's problems by getting on stage and performing, that's something that only a musician or actor can really understand, that this isn't just a job, it's necessary. You know, it's like an outlet for us to get all the shit out. You know, we live it, we dream about it, and we even kind of need this to survive.
Definitely. And it's also got like kind of a double meaning. So it's kind of like, I got it. Everything will be cool if I can get away from this situation and just get back under where I'm comfortable, under the hot stage lights. But then it's always under your hot stage lights, I say, too. Like, you know, or I'll take that, one or the other, but not what's happening right now. You know what I mean? You want to get your hot stage lights going again, then maybe, you know, I'll take that.
So So Stray Kitten Burns and Cindy, you know, are another pair of songs along the lines of like Icy, Far Away, or Dee Dee, where you're getting inside the head of another one of those damaged lives we were talking about that you haven't known personally. I mean, these songs are always very intimate and express the desperation of the people involved.
Yeah, it's true. Well, they're stories, you know, real story. And I like writing about real stuff, or maybe sometimes I'll take two people and intertwine them or kind of code it stuff. But yeah, that's Stray Kitten Burns, I really like that one a lot because that was one of the last ones I wrote. And
right. Actually,
funny, I kind of knew that I was, because sometimes I'll just play guitar like for a couple hours and just hit chords and do some solos and mess around. And I could come up with a bunch of really cool riffs and I won't even record them or remember or anything. And all of a sudden I'll hit something and I'll go, oh my God, I'm onto something, even if it's something simple. And I was actually in the shower when that, and I was thinking that in my lawn. And then when I, and all of a sudden I thought of my girl's across the water and that water's dark and cold, just like her heart tonight when all the secrets unfold. And I go, oh shit, I got to write that down. I'm going to forget that. And I was like, wet, slipping all over the place, trying to find like something to record it on. So yeah, that song, I really got like that song. And it's a little different too. You know, that was kind of the only song on the record that's a little different than the normal sound. And I thought Jamie did some really cool harmony stuff on it.
And again, you know, we're talking about the same kind of thing where it's like you're not some guy sitting in a room somewhere and just writing about stuff that you read in a book. You can tell that you know these people and you've lived this stuff. And that says a lot. You know, that's not too common.
Yeah, thanks, man. Well, that's why I think you could tell between the fake rock and the real rock, you know?
Exactly. Now, again, we're talking about Stray Kitten Burns. The part that really hits me hardest is that bridge you got. You know, she always asks me, baby, you all right, that kicks off the solo. I mean, I think the country and the world would be a lot better place if people took 5 minutes to really get inside the heads and hearts of the people around us, you know, touch the triumphs and the tragedies the way that you do with songs like this. I mean, it's really, you know, like I said, you're really just getting inside people's heads.
Yeah, I really like the way the bridge came out, too, and I sing kind of in a little lower register than I usually do, so I thought it was kind of gave it even a little bit more of a haunting effect.
Enough rope, just an old-fashioned cheating song. But structurally, again, you really build up the tension with that palm-muted bridge, and then it kind of explodes into the solo. Were you exposed to a lot of Wagner as a kid or something? Because your music taps into that same structural motif. My mother used to point about Wagner. She used to call him a dirty old man because his music always builds steadily, and then it hits this climax, and then it calms down and fades.
Say Wagner or Foghat? Okay.
Foghat.
No, I listened to more like black music when I was a kid, you know, like Motown and stuff like that. So I don't know. Yeah, that one was written right around the same era as All Those Strangers. So I've never really used it. I actually jammed on it with Adler and Road Crew for a while. So that was just staying around. And then I just never used it. And I was still kind of like, I'm not sure about this, even when I was cutting the vocals. But since my assistant was such a vain freak, he was like, oh, dude, you got to keep that. You know, it's like kind of a vibe of Beat the Bullet or something. And it's a little bit, if you listen to it again, even though it sounds like it's about cheating, and it's a little bit about that, it's also about kind of getting fucked over by the record company and stuff. You know, so it kind of had a double meaning.
Listen to Third Eye Cinema with our special guest tonight, Davey Bain. In our next segment, we'll be speaking a bit about future plans. Well, you're on Third Eye Cinema.
Artillery, and you're listening to Third Eye Cinema.
Hey, this is James Rivera. You are listening to Third Eye Cinema. I am the King of Hell.
Hello, this is Thomas Olson from the band Bloodbound, and you're listening to Third Eye Cinema.
Hi, this is Tushy from Otterhorn. You're listening to Third Eye Cinema.
And next, here's a favorite off of Enough Rope. This is Greener. love. You know, you were mentioning earlier that the record was really inspired by that crazy failed relationship that you had gotten out of recently. And it's pretty blatant when you hear songs like this and Greener. You know, like a lot of your music, it's hitting what had to be a really raw nerve.
Yeah, thanks, man.
Thank you. I mean, you're the one putting this stuff out there.
I don't want to do it again, though.
Right. Exactly.
It's funny because my drummer called me and he's like, "So I heard you're all in love," and because I got a new girl, right? And I'm like, "Yeah, yeah." So and then he's always like, "Are we? What's the next record going to be like when Van Halen?" And it's like, "So this is love." Stuff like that. He's like, "I'm really happy for you, but this music's still going to rock, right?"
I get the impression that Solid Gold and Vane were earlier songs you brought in because the tone's a little different from the rest of the album.
Gold is newer. It just sounds a little different because the verse riff, Danny wrote that riff, so it's a little different than a riff I'd write. And then I wrote the verse and all the melodies and words. But Vane is one of the first songs we used to play when we first started playing the clubs. Like, I mean, and so that's one of the oldest songs that we've actually probably put on a record. And everybody always liked it so much, but I never wanted to use it because the choruses went, "Vane, Vane," you know, and it wasn't really about me, but you know what, I can't use that. And I go, "Well, why don't you change it?" So we changed it to "Ain't It a Shame" and all this stuff and never got used. I even had friends back in the day, like, you know, in the club days, someone would go, "Vane, Vane," across the room, you know. You know, like, "Hey, what's up?" You know, and then we were kind of messing around with the riff at practice one day, and it was Ash and Tommy, and they just started laying into that super straight kind of beat. And I go, "God, it sounds so good the way you guys play it. It sounds so much like a No Respect thing." And then I go, "Well, maybe I'll change that, and maybe I'll change that." And then Ash is just like, "Dude, if we do that, you just got to do it exactly like the way you used to do it, you know." So I go, "Okay." So that one we really kind of went for the exact vibe of even kind of before the Beat the Bullet, Secrets. I mean, when we first came out, we were kind of even a little more dreamy and a little less like hard hitting as that, you know. So kind of left over from those first year of playing shows and stuff before we started really kind of getting our style completely developed.
And then, of course, you got Worship You. Again, you got this masochistic desperation where you're kind of conflating sex and religion with some S&M thrown in. I can hear this. You know, getting into this mindset makes for the best sex. I think that song and XXX are the real barnstormers on the record. While like Greener, Hot Stage Lights, and Straight Kitten Burns anchor it with that more intimate and personal side. Overall, this is like one of your strongest records. You know, if listeners haven't heard Vane since No Respect, this one and All Those Strangers are the ones I point them to right away. The three of those albums are very much of a piece.
Thanks. Yeah, the reviews have been pretty amazing on it. That's why I was, you know, people are like, this might even be better than No Respect. And people like, you know, were really surprised the band could top themselves or equal their first record, because most bands from that era kind of really have it.
Especially so many years later. I mean, it's like, geez. I mean, you've been going all along, but bringing the original band back together after, like, you know, 10 or so years apart and then putting out a record that sounds like it's from 20 years ago. I'm like, whoa, what is this?
But we're not older. We're more experienced now.
Right. So in the end, looking back, do you feel that Vane debuted or at least got signed too late to ride the crest of the Hollywood glam metal wave?
You know what? I don't know about too late. I think we just got kind of the right record company to make No Respect, but then the wrong record company to really do anything with it once we had it finished, you know? So it's kind of a double-edged sword. If we would have been on a different label, we would have probably been bigger, quicker, and then we could have kind of rode the last bit of the way, but then it would have still sucked because in 92, the big crash was anyway, you know? It had never made No Respect. We had plenty of chances to get a deal, but they wanted us to make, like, a record like, you know, Warrant or something like that, you know?
Right.
Along, you know, us kind of just a bunch of hit songs and really slick production, like a Bo Hill kind of thing or something. So,
right.
And we never really wanted to do that. We wanted to be like, we were more influenced by hard rock, really, than we were glam and stuff like that, you know? Like, we were listening more like Judas Priest and Iron Maiden and, you know, Aerosmith and stuff like that than we were listening to Hanoi Rocks and stuff like that. Even though we liked it, that wasn't really our favorite thing, you know?
That's probably why I liked you guys best out of that whole scene. So you fit into it, but you didn't. And it was like, no, these guys are more like a metal band as opposed to, like, even Guns N' Roses more doing that Aerosmith thing. And like, no, that wasn't Vane at all. You guys were straight ahead, but you still had that edge.
One of the record company guys that took over after a record company just kept falling apart, the last guy, Mike Bone, came over from Chrysalis Record after doing Billy Idol. And he came in awesome. We were really nervous going, "God, now we got a new president. What if he doesn't like us? You know, on our own label, we already had to get signed." But he really dug it. He goes, "Man, you guys kind of remind me when I was a kid and I saw Alice Cooper in the 70s, you know? Kind of remind me of that thing almost, you know, just really in your face." And, you know, back then we were actually No Respect is so live that the shows actually sounded better than the record, where a lot of bands that do a lot of studio stuff kind of have a hard time. But since we just cut it live, it sounded just like it, but even better because it was just bigger and louder, you know?
Do you think that the fact that you guys were basically situated in Frisco, and maybe the island thing too, as opposed to moving to L.A., marginalized the band somewhat?
I think it maybe could have been better if we moved to L.A., you know, because... But, you know, we've kind of always had this big thing about loyalty, and like all our San Francisco fans, we sold out so many shows in a row and broke all these records. And, you know, we just always had kind of a code of ethics. It wasn't the right business maneuver, but I think it's what kind of kept the magic on the band and made us do stuff that was so good.
Exactly.
We weren't just a bunch of assholes, you know what I mean, and that didn't like her and just wanted to use people and just kind of, you know, play like, hey, we're rock gods, fuck everybody kind of thing. You know, we were kind of that we wanted to maintain a level of quality and loyalty, and I think that energy kind of surrounded the band. That's one of the reasons we didn't do it. You know, and you never know. We could have gone somewhere else and done something, but, you know, it's just like my manager always says, you know, we kind of did it in England. We kind of got a revenge on some of the bands that were a little better than us when we went to Europe and did better than them. You know what I mean? So,
right.
But like you said, the time limit was a little bit of a drag, but nobody knew that was coming. You know,
right.
Everybody knew there's always a new band that changes it. But when the Nirvana thing came out, it had never changed, like where you couldn't even be in a band or it wasn't from
exactly.
there.
And, you know, what I wanted to get at there, too, was this is why we're talking to you now as opposed to talking to, like, Hurricane Alice, you know? So
everything
kind of happens for a reason here.
People are still listening to our record now, you know what I mean? And our manager used to always say that. She goes, you know what, you guys are making a record that people are going to keep listening to, and when the whole smoke clears of everything, you know, the bands that were on the corporate rock thing that you guys had to compete against by doing kind of more the island method of, like, building a career, which didn't get to happen because, you know, the whole thing got fucked up, you know.
Right.
She said, you'll be, you know, years from now, no one will care about them or it'll be really marginalized and you guys will be like an important real band, you know, just
exactly.
mean people. So, you know, she was right. So it's like, I'm happy that, you know, I'm not bummed. And once in a while, though, I have people come and like, dudes, you guys should have been bigger than Guns N' Roses and stuff like that. You know, they still try to comfort me after a show. And I'm like, no, it's okay, man, you know. I'm fine. I'm having a good time, and they still want to give you the sympathy, like, you got fucked over.
Well, that's it, because, you know, you got a lot of airplay over this way on our local college metal station, WSOU, and my drummer and I were both huge Vane fans. But I hazard to say, if you mention the name Vane to the average old-school metal fan, they might give you a blank look, you know, or maybe they vaguely remember, oh, yeah, I remember those guys beat the Bullet or whatever. And, you know, it's a damn shame, because you guys really were one of the best, particularly of bands who were big during that time period in the late days of 80s metal. So I'm just glad that you're still out there touring and putting out some really strong material like this. You know, you got quite a legacy already.
Back in the day, that was like really a strong point, you know?
But
we did a little late, and what I think really kind of messed it up, too, is the second record getting delayed and stuff like that, because there was still a little bit of time. And then the whole road crew thing was kind of going to be the Vane salvation, because it was really just Vane with just a superstar guy that could just take us right to the – and it worked until he fucked it all up, you know? Because we were ready to do a record with John Kalogner – I'm the biggest record company, so, you know, I thought that would have came out. But then, you know, it just would have hurt just as much. It's just like it was almost better to have it kind of disintegrated a little bit when the whole thing just collapsed. I think that was kind of easier to swallow than if you were just, you know, on tour on some big stage and all of a sudden they just showed up and went, everybody's got to go home, you know. You know, I think that might have been worse.
Exactly. And like I said, I'm just glad to see you're still touring and putting out some really strong material like this, because you got quite a legacy already, and judging by enough rope, the best may yet be to come. So,
thanks a lot, man.
I'm glad to hear that you got some new material in the works. How far along are you? You got a date or you have any plans when you're going to put this out?
Not really. Right now, I'm getting ready to produce a project. It's kind of a secret thing, so
okay.
I can't really talk about it. It's a kind of different artist, a singer, but it's on a major. And I'm going to be doing that for probably a couple of months straight. And then after that, I want to, you know, start. So I'm just kind of writing and just kind of coming up with some riffs and some different ideas. And I was just playing one of the things now, and just a really cool rockin' riff. And just, you know, kind of putting it all together. And then I've got a bunch of stuff left over that I didn't kind of completely develop for the last stuff that I like that I want to check out. So, but right now, and then maybe bring a couple of the old ones back that I never recorded. There's a couple. I got a list right now of like 20 things already. And then with all the stuff I'm writing now, so I'll probably whittle it all down from there and kind of hear, you know, hear some drums and stuff on it. So hopefully by the next summer or something like that, you know.
So do you have anything you'd like to plug, or did you want to point listeners to your website or your Facebook page?
Yeah, that'd be great.
So go ahead.
Okay. Well, anyway, come and check out DaveyVane.com. And we actually got a new website that's going to be up in about 2 weeks, and you're going to be able to download every single record from No Respect. Every record we've done, all seven records, download each one digitally. So that's kind of cool, right from our site.
Awesome.
And there's merch and shirts and all kinds of groovy stuff.
Well, with that, Davey, I'd like to thank you again for joining us here on Third Eye Cinema, and we'd love to have you back on to talk your next album.
Okay, thanks a lot, man. Really appreciate it. Yeah, sorry for the delay. You're right. This part was short. Last time we talked, like, for the whole day.
I know. I was like, he's probably thinking.
I started running out of juice, man. I was like, it's like a Bruce Springsteen concert.
All right.
Okay, thanks a lot. Really appreciate it, bro. Okay, keep in touch.
I will. So long. And to close out our interview with Davey, here's a track that's always been my favorite off their classic No Respect album, a song that really defines the band's sound and paved the way for an entire movement of emo kids. This is the title track, No Respect. joining us tonight. We hope you enjoyed the second part of our interview with David Zane. In 2 weeks, on week 46 of Third Eye Cinema, Grandmaster Y.K. Kim of the Miami Connection. If you'd like to contact us here, comments, suggestions, or you're a filmmaker or musician and like to join us on air, email us at thirdeyecinema@hotmail.com, visit our website, thirdeyecinema.wordpress.com, or our Facebook page, facebook.com/thirdeyecinema. Third Eye Cinema is brought to you by the Big Papa Online Network and Blog Talk Radio.
My name is Y.K. Kim, person who loves martial arts, live with martial arts, and breathe with martial arts. That is Y.K. Kim. I am a great master of martial arts, and at the same time, I'm a producer and director, writer, and actor in the Miami Connection. And I truly enjoyed talking with Gene, Third Eye Cinema. Thank you. Hi, everybody. I am Grandmaster of Martial Arts. My name is Y.K. Kim. You know, I truly appreciate for your interview that Third Eye Cinema. You are great interviewer. I could not believe. And you are great communicator. You made me so comfortable. That's great. I want everybody, at least the ones watch my connection. And I really appreciate all audience. This is Third Eye Cinema.
If you missed any part of this or any other Third Eye Cinema broadcast, just visit our website or Facebook page for the links to the shows in question. All Block Talk Radio shows are available for archive listener download at your convenience.